Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Okay. All right, here we are, back and ready to go. Levels look good. Thumbs up. Mic is hot. Talent is hotter. let's do it. Put in the books. Episode 191. Here we go. Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new podcast is posted for your podcasting pleasure, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. We're there too. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and by all means, and most importantly, well, secondly importantly, I guess, first is to listen, but secondly is to tell your friends, send them a link, send them a message, send them your review and your good words about this podcast. Only asking for an hour of your time a day or a week, so that's not too much. And if you like what you hear, don't forget, you go to WGNplus.com, go to the entertainment section, and go to the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic prompt, where you will find all previous 190 episodes, which can only mean one thing. Welcome to episode 191. Happy to welcome in the new year, and also welcome back after a while away, regular contributor Emily Arminetti, as we take an extended stroll to the Pop Culture Club this week. So happy new year and welcome back, Emily.
Hey, Jim. Thank you. Happy new year to you, too.
Yes, good to talk to you. You were sick for a while and other things going on, but we're glad that you're back in the fold, and it's a perfect. It's almost as if it was made for your return.
Yes, perfectly timed.
Unbelievable. Of course, what I'm talking about here, what we want to chat with, if you have listened to the podcast in the past, you know that Emily is a huge watcher, admirer, fan of the second tier royal couple, as I like to refer to them. Although I don't know if they're second tier anymore. I don't even know if they're a royal couple anymore. They're certainly a couple, but they're not royal, I guess, officially. And so in the past couple of weeks, Harry and Meghan have announced that they would like to become just Harry and Meghan, independent of the royal family and their duties, and kind of just be a hip happening couple, without all the English monarchy traveling on their shoulders. And so in the past couple of weeks, not only did they make the announcement, but the royal family had a sit down to discuss how this would work and things like that. And so I'm just wondering, what do you think about the news? What do you think about motivated this? And what do you think is in store for now, I guess, just plain Harry and Meghan?
Yeah, a lot to unpack there.
yeah.
Okay. Well,
so and they'll be unpacking it without any aides. They will be doing it on their own. They will not have.
Let's back up the train though, because I think first of all, you really have to, if you really read their announcement, they're not saying that they just want to be plain old Harry and Meghan and be commoners and live that totally, completely an independent life. What they're really saying is that they're trying to keep a foot in both worlds. If you really look at what they've outlined in their announcement. Now, all of this was done, of course, without consulting anyone at the palace. It definitely caught the palace off guard by all reports, and somewhat left them on the back foot. So, like, I guess that would be our starting point. It's like, they want their independence. They do not want to be considered senior members of the royal family, because with that comes a lot of obligation and duty. But they are saying they do want to continue to support the queen and carry out some level of duty in support of the queen. So, I think what they're really trying to do is keep a foot in both worlds. And there's a lot to unpack there. So, I mean, my initial reaction to this was, I mean, definitely surprised. It is certainly an audacious move in every sense of the word. You know, I mean, on one hand, it's bold and daring, and they've kind of said that, you know, in their announcement, they said they want to carve out a, quote, progressive new role. And because this is totally unprecedented, that's exactly what it would be. I mean, this is, would be considered extremely progressive if they are able to pull this off. On the other hand, it seems very rash and potentially disrespectful, especially because the palace wasn't consulted. It's hard to say really why that happened. I mean, I've seen reports that say that Harry was very upset by the recent photo that the palace issued of kind of the heirs to the throne. So it was the queen,
right?
It was Charles,
yeah.
It was
George
William,
and George.
And George and you know that. And so some reports have said that Harry was very upset by this, and Meghan was too, and that he felt he was being pushed out. And so that you know, they're thinking this was a knee-jerk reaction to that. On the other side, you know, I don't really buy that this was a knee-jerk reaction to that. I think this is the cumulative effect of how they have been feeling for quite some time and kind of the treatment that Meghan's been getting. And certainly this was not something that they just did hastily. I mean, it may be a decision that they made. The decision itself may be rash, but the act of putting some plans together and announcing it, I mean, this had to have taken them some time. Like, I don't know if you've seen the website that they...
Oh, yeah. No, I've been following this quite a bit.
So these are some very fully fleshed plans that they have. So they have been working on this for some time, although, like I said, not really consulting the palace by all accounts, and really kind of catching the palace off guard. Now, the other side of this is that they have reported that they've been working on this for some time. Harry had not been planning to announce it without consulting his family, but that he heard the Sun, that it had been leaked to the Sun, and the Sun was going to publish a story, and therefore he felt his hand was forced and that he needed to go out with an announcement. And as you and I both know from dealing with the media for a long time, that is not uncommon. If something's leaked to the media, you feel that your hand is forced and that you need to go out so that everyone has your side of the story and you're shaping the narrative rather than this kind of coming out.
I'm just wondering from the standpoint of what you said at the earlier, I think is very key to this. Because I've been very torn on this. I've kind of floated on both sides, and I'm still trying to navigate this. And you know, it started, like you said, with the announcement, and then the reaction, and then we find out that the royal family really didn't know, and then the queen has a powwow with all the major players.
Yeah,
to which was kind of everything here, like you said earlier, is very unprecedented. I mean, this really does harken back to almost the abdication, you know, back in the, you know, which really put Elizabeth in the line of succession.
It did.
When her father took over as king, because his brother was really the king, and he gave up the throne because he was marrying a divorced American woman, and at that time, the rules of the monarchy were much more... the rules have always been there, but the adherence to them was much more stringent than today. There's been a lot more bending of rules over the last 30 years or so. in that way, on the changing of rules. But and that's how Elizabeth got on the throne. And the irony of this whole thing is, if her uncle had not abdicated the throne, her whole line of the family would never have been in it.
Right.
And, you know, there would have probably been no Lady Di. There would have, I mean, it would have been, talk about a completely different thing. But my point is, this has been unprecedented. But I'm really, the more I'm thinking about this and looking at it, at first I wasn't surprised. And I looked at it from a standpoint like, look, you know, now that William has three kids, and I even looked up how the lineage goes, yeah. Harry now is so far out of the game with, in terms of possibly ever becoming king, because even if Charles dies and even if William dies, it's now William's line of heirs. You know, it's not like, oh, well, since William died, then Harry gets it. No, as soon as George was born, Harry started to go down the pecking order. And then when the daughter Charlotte was born, and now because women can also become queen, if there is even if there is a male heir who might be younger, Harry now, for him to be king, Elizabeth, Charles, William, George, Charlotte, and Louis all have to die.
Well, that's right, but at the same time, though, I don't think Harry.
I'm not hearing. Are you far away from the microphone?
Oh no, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you just sounded a little. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
I'm here. Okay. Yeah. I think it's a lot more than that, though. I don't think the reason for Harry to continue on.
No. I'm not saying that. No, but I'm just saying it. So, first of all, we have that. We have that he is far down the line.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We have seen, basically. Like Prince Andrew, who now is almost in his 60s, you know, aside from making any real contribution or doing anything, Andrew's main claims to fame have been disastrous personal life things, his marriage to Fergie and the scandal that surrounded that later on, and now this connection to Jeffrey Epstein. Right. So he's been kind of a royal eunuch. Charles has been sitting there for literally his entire lifetime, now almost 70, I think, or he may be 70, waiting for his mother to pass away and be king. You know, his reign may be long or may be short, depending on how long he lives when he finally takes over. But I'm just wondering now when you know, and I'm just wondering, what is the motivation here? I'm just wondering, is Meghan, I mean, let's not forget here, a lot of change has happened, and, you know, whether it's fair or not, you know, a lot of people in the British press have been calling Meghan Yoko Ono.
Right.
Because,
honestly, there is potential for her to become, for the feeling to be that she's kind of this modern day Wallis Simpson, Prince Edward abdicated the throne.
Yeah, and Yoko, you know, and the reference there is because Yoko supposedly broke up the Beatles. Yeah. I don't think there's an easy answer here, because without talking to these people, but what I found interesting was that you know, since he's been married, all of a sudden, there's this new streak of independence in Harry. Harry was, you know, he had his wild streak, but he was very much into the royal family. He went to the military like he was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. He's been very active in charities. He's always been doing service. And so I find it interesting now suddenly that there's the need, or he feels the need, or I'm just wondering how much he feels the need, or they feel the need, because, you know, he is now never going to be king. And I'm wondering, after now the excitement of the wedding has passed, the excitement of their child has been born, and so now what are Harry and Meghan to do moving forward? In terms of grabbing headlines, there's no question. William and Kate, they're the rock stars. I mean,
see, I disagree with you. And this is what I think is actually really sad about this announcement in a way. You know, I think that Meghan and Harry, as senior members of the royal family, I think they were actually, when they got together, I think they came to the forefront. I think they were, you know, probably more popular than William and Kate, although not to take away, William and Kate are very popular, no doubt. But I think both couples brought a lot of kind of newfound popularity to the royal family and to the monarchy. I think the potential that Meghan and Harry have to make a change and, you know, to really change the way people see the monarchy is so huge if they remain members of the senior members of the royal family, which is what they're trying to get out of. And so I think there's a little bit of sadness there that they'll not, we won't see them carry out that potential in those roles. But as far as their motivation for this, I mean, you know, I have my theories, and certainly there's a lot of talk about it in the media right now. But I don't know if you watched that documentary, An African Journey, which aired, I don't know, it was maybe a couple months ago, before maybe in the fall at some point. Right. Okay, they spoke really candidly with journalist Tom Bradby, who apparently is maybe a friend of Harry's, they've said. They spoke really candidly about how difficult it has been for them in a way that was kind of shocking. I mean, the words that were coming out of their mouths were, you know, of course, massaged and finessed and didn't sound harsh, but at the same time, for what royals typically will...
like what? Why? What did they say?
Oh, just, I mean, Harry spoke very candidly about the trauma he still feels about his mother's death. He blames the media for that, and it sounds like to this day he still has lots of triggers around that. You know, he said, every time I see a flash go off, every time I hear a clip, it takes me back to that. He believes that the media killed his mother.
Oh, right.
Then, yeah. On the other hand, and you know, and he talked very candidly about how he wants to protect his wife from a similar fate, his duty to protect his family from, you know, the same type of treatment. And, you know, that's just not something you see royals typically do. You don't, they've got the stiff upper lip. You know, you don't see them necessarily. They go by, remember, it was the queen mother's, wasn't it? Her saying, never complain, never explain, right. You know, they right. don't typically go out and complain. I mean, yes, we saw Princess Diana share a lot, but a lot of that was after she was actually divorced from Charles. So, you know, you usually don't see royals talk like that in a public forum. Meghan was also interviewed in the documentary. She was very candid about how she feels she's been treated unfairly. And she came right out and said to Tom Bradby, when he said to her, how are you doing? And she said, she teared up. And that's also very rare, you know, that's, and that probably was a little bit scandalous in the family too, for someone to show that kind of emotion publicly. And she said, thanks for asking, because not many people have asked me how I'm doing. And a lot of people read into that, read between the lines, she's suggesting that nobody in the royal family has had her back other than her husband, and nobody has asked her how she's doing. So that's something that people are sort of reading into that. But overall, you just have to watch this documentary to realize these two are really going through a tough time, and they don't seem to feel like they have a lot of support, and they're at their wit's end.
But you know, I also think that this to me was, you know, this is part of the deal.
Right. Agreed.
You know,
totally
this
agree.
Is part of the deal. And, you know, not to sound cliched here, but this was a very typical millennial move. This smacked of millennialism, whatever that may be. And I'm not trying to push this down, but or put anybody down. But this was everything you've said is correct. And if you dissect what you said, it was all about them. And part of the monarchy, and especially if you watch Elizabeth, the tradition of it, and just as you quoted the Queen Mother, Elizabeth's mother, that is kind of the deal.
Right.
And whether it's a great, whether it's right or wrong, whether it is a pleasurable life to lead or not, on a daily basis, there are trade-offs. You are born into, immense wealth and immense privilege, and you don't always get something for nothing. And like you said, it looks like they want to keep their feet in one side or the other.
Right.
And that is exactly what they're doing. And my point on that is you can't.
Right. Well,
you
so can't. Here's where it gets really
you either buy into this, and like I said, I'm not trying to pound on her, but I do think that once you know, it's one thing. Once you get into that, I think what's happened is, and this is purely speculation, obviously, but I think once the marriage is over, as you know, everybody who gets married and then you know acclimates into the other side of their family. Now this is an acclimation that is on steroids in terms of getting to know your husband's family, right? I mean, this is a family off the charts. But you know for during your engagement and even at the beginning of your marriage, you know, you guys are on a pedestal.
Right.
You know, you guys the engaged couple, the newly married couple, everybody's interested, excited. You've got showers, you've got weddings, you've got all this stuff celebrating you. Okay, then the wedding is done, and in their case, very quick order, they have a kid. Okay, more excitement, more attention, but I think when you get into the royal structure, as much as Meghan is used to celebrity, I don't think even the most put upon celebrity on earth, whoever that may be, a celebrity who knows the game, who has been a celebrity for decades and knows how to play the game, I think even they would be taken aback at what it's like to be a royal. The attention and the overall tradition and the way that they are treated. And I think once she got into that mechanism, and once all of the celebratory parts of their relationship were over, I think that she looked around, to your point about, geez, nobody's asked me. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, when I said that William and Kate are rock stars, what I didn't mean, in terms of popularity, you're exactly correct. Meghan and Harry are the rock stars in terms of the buzz around them and the interest around them. But my point is, within the structure of Buckingham Palace and within the monarchy, after all the celebrations about Harry and Meghan were over, I think the focus and the respect and the aim, once you get into the machinery, is the heirs to the throne. And I think that probably took, because, and Harry's used to that. Harry has grown up in the shadow of William, knowing that where he stands. But I don't think Meghan truly understood, when you get into that family, that, you know, the royal heirs are the ones who get all the attention. And
well,
I
you know,
think
and
that
she also said in the documentary that when things got very serious with Harry, her English friends said to her, "He's great, but don't do this, because this, your life is going to change, and probably not for the better." And she said, "I went into it eyes open, having been warned. I never thought it would be easy, but I thought it would at least be fair." And that was her miscast. So I think you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
I don't think, and because they're not worried. They're not worried about fairness.
This is part of the gig, and this is part of the job.
Yeah, and they're not worried about fairness.
She seemed to hugely underestimate that. But you're also right that there's a lot of privilege that comes along with this. You know, there's a vast fortune behind them. They not only get public funding, they get sort of, we'll say, draw a salary just
right,
for
yeah.
being. I mean, her occupation is princess of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, that's what she puts on
and
her
she
tax
gets
form
paid for that. That's a paid role.
Yeah.
But also they get quite a lot of money through Prince Charles has various streams.
Oh yeah, they're not hurting. They're not going to be hurting for money.
Now, no, but here's the thing, and this is also what's important about their announcement. So there's they're ready for people to say to them, hey, that was the deal, because you can sort of read between the lines again in their announcement. There's a little bit of this defensiveness where they've come right out and said that they are working toward becoming financially independent. So it's almost as if they're saying, guess what, everybody, we're casting off the velvet handcuffs. Now, does that mean they don't want any money? I don't think so. I think that I've read reports that say that if you read into it more, they are hoping that they're still going to get some funding from Prince Charles. I didn't see that in what I read of their plan.
Right, but I've heard that.
The whole plan in full. So, you know, it's like a little bit of, yeah, we're trying to have our cake and eat it too, but I think they're trying to offset the whole argument of, you knew what you were getting into, this is the gig, by saying, you know what? We did, but we want out, and we're not going to take any public funds. Now, do I think that's going to make people feel better about it? Probably not. I mean, just because they're not taking British tax dollars as a salary, I don't think is going to make Brits feel better.
Yeah, well, like I said, but I think, you know,
there's the whole question of security. I mean, they can't just go live
right.
No,
yeah,
life.
They and that security is paid for by the English government.
Right. And so there's that question. And this is all the things that now they're having, you know, the royal aides are having to grapple with and hammer out. Because here's the thing. As shocking as this was, as crazy as it is to think that these two in this position would, that this has been so bad that they're willing to walk away from all of this, you know, by all accounts, going into that meeting with the Queen when, you know, Meghan was still in Canada, but Harry met with the Queen and with Charles and with William, and the Queen told them, we need to sort this out. We need to come to an agreement. They apparently, allegedly, if you listen to the talking heads and the royal experts, they went into that meeting knowing that they held all the cards and that they had the palace over a barrel. And maybe that's true, you know, if you really think about it. And then there's like the official side of things, which is like, they did put the palace on the back foot. This is now being hashed out in public. And, you know, the palace does not want any of this messiness. They don't want that. So they're going to want to make this go away, and they're going to want to get it sorted out as quickly as possible.
Look,
but then the other side of this, you have to remember, Harry is not Princess Diana. He's not divorcing the royal family. He will always be a member of the royal family. The Queen is his grandmother, and by all accounts, they're very close. And so she will want to work this out for her beloved grandson. Now, is she furious? Yes, they claim that the first statement that she issued, basically saying, which in a nutshell said, hold your horses, they claim that, like, that is like palace speak for the Queen is furious. Yeah. And I'm sure she probably was. But when cooler heads prevail, she knows for the long-term health of the family and the monarchy, she has to figure out a way to make this work.
Well,
they all have to.
Well, yeah, but certainly. But here's the thing. Yeah, but I understand all the things you're laying out here. What I'm trying to get at is more of the motivation of this and the need for it, because basically, what they're doing and what you're saying is all correct, and Harry has every right to. My only difference is that the role that Harry and Meghan play, as I said before, is already stamped out. It was Andrew's life. That's your luck of the draw here. And so, yes, the Queen has to, you know, they're trying to make this as good as they can, because Harry is basically saying, I don't want to be Andrew. I don't want to be treated like a second-class citizen. She's saying, I don't want to be treated like a second-class citizen. That's the impression that she's getting. I mean, here, there was nothing wrong with that picture of the heirs.
Well, listen,
because that is the lineage of the next 40 years. There is nothing wrong with that picture. The only thing that was wrong with that picture is if you're Meghan going and poking him in the ribs, going, why aren't you in that picture?
Right, right.
I don't think Harry had a problem with that picture.
I agree with that. But I don't know about about any correlation with Andrew. And I only say that because, is it, yes.
I'm just saying the brother that's not in line.
That's what I'm saying. It's not easy to be the spare, as they call it. It's not necessarily easy. However, Andrew never had the popularity Harry had even before he met Meghan. People, he has always been in at least the British people's hearts, maybe even everyone's, because his mother was so beloved globally. And also, you know,
that's the point. So Meghan, so isn't Meghan, but isn't Meghan saying then, hey, I got news for you, Harry. We're actually more popular than William and Kate. How come everybody's paying attention to them? Why aren't they paying attention to us? And the fact of the matter is, because once, as I said before, when you get into the mechanism, that is the most important thing. The most important thing is the heirs. And I think that this was a little sense of, you know, once the spotlight, they're going to always have the spotlight on them. And they're always going to have media scrutiny. And they're always going to be popular because of the fact that they are the younger couple and they don't have that that burden of the crown. So they can always be the hipper, cooler, more contemporary couple because William and Kate are bound to live a more traditional monarch life because of their station. And
right.
So,
yes.
And so I think that this was like, well, wait a minute. I think that, and like I said, I'm not trying to pound on her, but you know, I thought it was very interesting. To your point, this was a major deal. This was unprecedented, and I think it was disrespectful that Meghan was on a conference call instead of in that room.
Well,
during that meeting,
I've read about that because I was curious about it too. I also think I actually thought it was weird that she was already in the UK,
right? And well, no, she was in Canada.
But I read that the reason why Meghan, Camilla, and Kate were not in the room is because it was the heads of each family. So Harry is considered the head of his family. William, his Charles.
I understand that, but she was on the phone. So she was still involved. She's a part of this decision. Kate and Camilla are not a part of this.
So they were saying that she would not be sitting on a conference. Like, so the people who were reporting straight from the palace were saying she will not be like sitting on a speakerphone in the room. That's not how this is going to work. What will happen is there will be discussions. Harry will then leave the room. He will consult her by phone. They will make this decision together, but that was how it was going to work. So it's not like, you know, she's on a speakerphone with the Queen, you know?
Yeah, but my point is, she's a part of this decision.
She is, absolutely.
And so she, you know, Camilla and Kate don't have any place in this. This is not their decision. But Meghan, but these two, like you said at the top here, they are trying to create this new life together. So I think as in respect to the Queen, you didn't have to go. No, there were no imminent threats. There was no paparazzi craziness going on that you had to run away to Canada before this announcement and before this meeting. And at the very least, you should have come back and sat in that room and looked at the Queen in the eye and looked at William in the eye and looked at Charles in the eye and explained to them with Harry exactly why you're doing this. And I thought that was a cop-out. And I believe...
we don't know. That's the thing. We don't know who...
all I know is she wasn't there. She wasn't... We can agree on she wasn't there. And
she
that was a cop-out. That was, okay... And I'm getting a sense here that Harry is chasing the tail on this. I think that as much as we want to make this sound like this was a couple's decision, I believe there was a lot of instigation on her part. Don't forget, if you remember that royal wedding,
right? Well, that's the curious thing about this too is like, they haven't even been married that long, so it really didn't take long.
Well, this is my point, but I think right away
for both of them to become really fed up with this. But that said, like, I just think it's also curious. Like I said, you know, my take on this, and based on everything I've read and reading between the lines of their announcement, is that it seems like they were frustrated by how she was portrayed in the media. They felt they got little protection or support from the royal family. And so, as the Brits say, they basically throw their toys out of the pram. You know, that's the British saying for when you just have a temper tantrum, right? And that may be kind of what led up to this. But then, you know, I think about it and I'm like, wow, how is this really going to work? I don't really get how this solves the problem because
it doesn't. Because do you think that they're not going to get media scrutiny?
Right. I think it's going to get worse now.
Yeah, because now they've actually made themselves more targets. Like I said, they have, you know, they had their moment in the sun and they had their kid. And okay, we'll see how he grows. But they really now were taking a back seat. And I think, and that wasn't anything against them. As I said before, that's their place. And I think it bothered her because suddenly she wasn't the princess that she thought that she was going to be. Don't forget, she's a celebrity. She's an actress. She's used to attention. She wants attention. She was, you know, remember, aside from a few bikini pics, do you even hear about Pippa anymore, Kate's sister?
Right.
If you remember, Pippa was almost more popular than Kate for a while.
Right.
And that was suddenly, and then she got married, then all of a sudden she wasn't the sexy, sister. She got married and she has slowly faded away. You don't even hear the name Pippa anymore. And that is the way it is because her sister is going to be the Queen of England someday. And in the same case here, Harry's brother is going to be the King of England. And when I was getting back to the royal wedding, you know, remember how you talk about being progressive and moved. Now, if you remember some of the aspects of that wedding, it was very untraditional.
Right.
And yes. And she certainly had her way. I mean, it wasn't at Westminster Abbey. Right. It featured a black gospel choir, which is completely off the Anglican religion service. Mm-hmm. There was a black Episcopal reverend who was preaching in a very kind of traditional Episcopal black church kind of way, which was very much a break with the Anglican royal tradition. So she certainly got her way in that wedding. It was very unconventional.
Right. Yes.
I'm sure you watched it. If you even saw it, I mean, there were some times during that wedding that they were showing the royals and they didn't even know what the hell was going on here.
Yeah, they did, because they're really not used to that. I mean, honestly, this is why that was kind of when I actually started to like them, because I thought, you know what? I like that they're doing things their way. I like that there's a lot of joy and energy.
I understand that. But that's my point. But my point is that was their day.
Right.
And they were able to plan that. But moving forward, his role and William's role and Charles's role and Elizabeth's role, they're all very well determined. And I think Harry had been playing that role, but I think that she's looking around and going, well, I don't understand. Wait a minute. Now, what about this? And I have heard there's been in the papers, and especially in the tabloid press in England, there have been little subtle racist remarks made about her. Yeah. There's a lot floating around this story, but I really, ultimately, I was like you initially, I think. I was like, well, you know what? They're young. He's out of the line of succession. As I said before, I'm not saying that he necessarily looked and said, I don't want to be Andrew. But my point is, you know, it's like, you know what? I want to, you know, we have the potential here because of our popularity to do good charitably.
Right.
We're in the shadow. We're always going to be in the shadow. And I think both of them, especially her, is not used to being in the shadow. And so, but as this continued to progress, I'm still thinking to this, and I've moved somewhere toward the other direction is, yeah, but you know, you to your point, which is a good point about the friends and everything, this is the deal. This is the Faustian deal that you make.
Right.
And
but I think
and I just don't think you can have it both ways.
Their charitable work, but I think what they want to get out of is, in some ways, there is a relentless travel schedule, but I think that some of the stuff that they do that they go abroad to do is really great, and I'm sure they would love to keep doing that. But I think they wanted to get out of the rinky-dink, you know, hey, go cut this ribbon at a hospital opening.
Yeah, but see, but you know what? But see, that's the point. Rinky-dink, but see, even that description, the rinky-dink, that, sadly, Harry... Well, you are the rinky dink. You are the rinky dink brother. That's your rinky dink. That is, you know, that is your job. You know, I'm sorry if it's rinky dink.
To some extent, they all have to do it.
Right. That's my point. That, you know, everybody except and the queen does rinky dink stuff. I mean, that's their job.
Yes, part of the gig.
So, I mean, I just find it. You know, I was just, as it progresses, I said, and I think, you know, the queen, to your point, you could see her grappling with this, because at the end of the day, aside from being the queen, aside from being this monarch, aside of being this kind of vestige of tradition, she is a grandmother. And I think she still, she has a great affection for those two boys, not only because they're the grandchildren, but because of the Diana situation.
Yeah.
I mean, you cannot forget, at the end of the day, take away all the publicity, all the titles, all the pomp and circumstance. These were two teenage kids whose mom got killed. You know, that would be traumatic for somebody living in Podunk, Iowa, to deal with. And so I do think that she has a, you know, an affection and even a special affection. And I think she's trying to even... accommodate, because as I said before, 40 years ago, this wouldn't, they would have kicked him out of the family.
You know that Edward was made to live outside of the UK, and he could only come back to the UK allegedly if he had the Queen's.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, if 40 or 50 years ago, if a member of the royal family not only had brought up this subject, but had blindsided the monarch in discussing it, they would have been excommunicated. They would have been sent out to Siberia as far as the royal family is concerned. So the fact that she even decided to have a meeting and decided to work this out, because she realizes, like you said earlier, the popularity of those two, they are still very valuable to the royal family in terms of PR, mm-hmm. and in terms of promoting England, promoting the monarchy. So she doesn't want to just cast them aside, because she says, we wish they would be. We're sorry to see that they won't be full time members. She understands their rock star status in terms of the public and the media, but at the same time, as I said, when it comes down to it, the number one guy is William and Kate and their kids. And I think, you know, I mean, nobody really noticed it. I don't know if you noticed it was interesting. And now it makes a lot more sense. But, you know, when their baby Archie was born, he didn't have a title.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I really even noticed it.
No, but my point is,
I don't even remember if they said at the time, like, they needed to figure out what is.
No, but how interesting. But you were saying how you think that this has been long time coming. So clearly,
it's been a long. But I think it's again, it's the cumulative effect of the way she's been treated. But I believe.
Yeah, but my point is, they may have already at that time when the baby was born, may already have said, you know what, to the royal, you know, whoever, you know, whether it's the queen or William, whoever, don't even bother to give him a title.
I don't know about that. I don't think any of them would turn down a title. And also,
why? Aren't they relinquishing their titles?
I would imagine
they're going to relinquish their titles. Don't they have to?
Do they have to what?
They're going to relinquish their titles.
No, that's going to be the Queen's decision. So here's another thing that's going to be hammered out is, will they get to keep the HRH?
That's what I mean.
Her Royal Highness titles. I would imagine. I mean, again, if it's true that Harry and Meghan walked in holding all the cards, which it sounds like that probably is the case, I would imagine the Queen will let them keep their titles. Not just because she loves Harry so much, not just because they actually do still bring a lot to, you know, the monarchy, or she maybe won't want to be seen to make this messier than it already is. But because, you know, let's not forget, people did not like that Diana got stripped of her title. And Diana divorced a member of the royal family. Harry right. is still, right. again, a member of the royal family. So there's that to consider. And that will be part of what they're hammering out, in addition to how does this work financially and how do we handle security and all that other stuff. And that's why it's so complicated. In her most recent, her personal statement about this, which she made after their discussions, she acknowledged, the queen for the queen to make a personal statement is apparently very rare, but you know, she called them by their names, Harry and Meghan. So she did, it has not gone unnoticed that she did not refer to them by their titles,
right.
but in my mind, that doesn't necessarily mean she's going to strip them of their titles. I mean, she could, and that is her decision to make, but to me, it signals that we're not going to give any. We're not doing, until this is all hammered out, they're just Harry and Meghan, and then we'll figure out, you know. So this is not, like, I think she doesn't want to refer to them officially and necessarily as his and her royal highnesses.
Well, you know what's so funny about all this, though?
Because it's still all being figured out.
At the end of the day, when all this is done, all this official stuff, titles, who's going to be this, who's going to be that, who's going to pay for this, financially independent, all these buzzwords that are floating around this decision. At the end of the day, all this really is a younger brother moving out of his family's house. That's all this
that.
Is.
You say that, but these are serious people.
Well, I understand, but my point is, there's all these. There, everybody now is looking at all of these different ramifications of this, and I guarantee you, as I said, when you strip this down of everything, it's a younger brother and his new wife and their new kid moving out of the house. And so all this stuff that seems so crazy or so important right now about titles and security, you know, who's going to pay for it, and financially independent, and trusts, and stipends, and all this stuff. It really is all for show, because when all is said and done, as it sits right now, from what I understand, Harry has like $35 million of his own.
Okay, yeah, he does, but I don't think that they would be living a much different
life. I understand, but my point is, okay, but. Even on that money, they can live a lavish lifestyle, okay? At the end of the day, his father is Prince Charles, and his grandmother is the Queen. He will be not only taken care of in terms of inheritances and payments, it's the same way. If you've got a billionaire father and you say, I'm going to, you know, Dad, I don't want to live in your mansion anymore. Me and my wife want to go live on our own. Your billionaire father says, okay, and you know what? I'll buy you a mansion and here's another $100 million. I mean, that's the reality of a family dynamic. And there's no difference here at the end of the day. All this stuff is being bandied around now, but at the end of the day, Meghan and Harry are going to live a lavish lifestyle. They're going to be taken care of. Someone's going to be paying for their security. All these little things. And ultimately what happened here was that a younger brother who's not really in the family business as much as, you know.
But he is, though.
Right, I understand. But my point is, he's not going to be. No, yes, but he's not. But my point is, he's not going to be CEO. He'll never be.
He's not going to be CEO.
Right. So my point is, you ever watch that show Succession?
Yeah, I love that show.
Right, exactly. Okay, so this is my point. Why do you think they're all fighting for the job? Because they know that if they're out of the three kids on that show, who doesn't become the CEO is really not important. Yes, they're part of the family. Yes, they get the respect of everybody. But at the end of the day,
on that show, there's a waiting for the job, which is because, let me just finish, which is because any one of them could get the job. In the case of Harry, there's no fight to be had. That's just that.
Right. So that's his place. So that's my point.
So there's no fight.
Right.
He doesn't have to fight for a job.
But my point is he's never going to be the king. He's never going to be the CEO.
But he could be an integral part of
And he'll be an integral part of the family.
You know, of the monarchy.
He'll still be cutting ribbons. If he's still doing charitable things, that means he's going to be cutting ribbons. He's going to be going to different parts of the world. Maybe it's not going to be to, like what you said, where it's going to be the palace dictating, oh, by the way, you've got an Australian tour in March, you've got a Nigerian tour in November, you know, you've got to go to this place on Tuesday. Maybe he's not going to have that kind of a role, but he's still going to be playing a PR and ambassadorial role to England and to the royal family. He's just going to be doing it more on his terms as opposed to their terms. That's really what this is, because as I said, he's not going to be under the scrutiny. He's not going to be under the heavy traditional hand of what every move that William makes is going to be historic, because if it falls out of the realm, he's the king. That's why you cannot underestimate the power of what the heirs and the king have, as opposed to, you know, I even forgot that Charles has another brother.
Oh, yeah. But
do you even know? Do you even know who Prince Edward is? Do you even know who he is?
Well, he has a sister, too.
You know, I understand that, right? This is my point. Do you even know who these people are? I mean, that's my point. That's because they're so far off the radar.
I don't think there's any concern in Harry and Meghan's mind about whether they're well known enough or not, or whether they can play an important role. I just think that they were tired of the way, and I have heard from my friends who live in the UK that she really truly is, whether they like her or not, that she really truly is abused by the media there. And so I think it was the sense that there was no one sticking up for her in the royal family, except Harry was kind of going off on his own doing interviews and sticking up for her. And so they just said,
But here's my question. What is sticking up? But what is sticking up? See, this is where I get back. This is what I get back to the millennial thing.
Issuing a statement. It could be as simple as that.
But this is my point. My point is, what is this sticking up? This sounds like I'm being bullied. This is another millennial complaint.
I understand. Well, and I also have to wonder, I think two things. Number one, honestly, I don't know how Harry is going to do in this new setup. It'll be interesting to see, because he has lived his entire life being groomed within the monarchy and for a certain role and according to royal protocol and with a certain structure. And he doesn't really know any other way of life except for when he was in the military. And I would argue that's a little bit different, you know, because most anyone who goes into the military, that's so different from the life they knew, you know, and then you plug back into your old life. And so it'll be interesting to see how he adapts to whatever this role is that they end up agreeing on and carving out. But on the other side, I still think that this puts them under more scrutiny. I think they're being seen as trying to have their cake and eat it too, potentially being seen as throwing their toys out of the pram. And so even, I don't think, I have to think the British public probably wouldn't appreciate a person like feeling like they're quitting despite everything that's been invested in them so far, and they've only been married for a couple of years. And so my thought is, I feel like this would only alienate the British public and add more fuel to the media fire.
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
and,
I mean,
they're going to be out there dealing with that without
without the mechanism of the palace to handle it.
And without being in this protected bubble.
Right. And Harry, as much as, doesn't even understand, to your point, he doesn't even understand how much that bubble protects him, because he doesn't know. He doesn't know life outside the bubble. And he's going to get a little glimpse of the life outside the bubble. And it's going to be very interesting, because to your point, you know, it's one thing, it's always the grass is greener. You know, and I've heard him quoted to say, he's talked to people, geez, I wonder what it's like to ride on the tube, you know, on the subway. Uh-huh. You know, he's lived in this bubble. And so what will be interesting is the bubble is going to be extended to some extent, and to some extent, they're going to be living outside the bubble. And it's going to be interesting to see how he handles it. You know, don't forget, here's what's going on. She doesn't like the bubble.
Right.
He doesn't know any life except the bubble.
Right.
And I think that he's following her. He's got married. He's got a kid. He feels that he's the protector of his family. His wife is obviously not happy. She's complaining. I mean, my God, like I said, she ran out of the country as soon as this was discovered. It was almost like, I can't wait to get out of here. And so I think he's following that, but he's going to have a very big transition to make, because I believe that he was into, I don't think he had a problem with the world. I think he, you know, he's in his 30s. He's been growing up in that bubble. I think he much better accepted his role as subservient to William, because he was born under you can't tell me that from the day that he became aware, he didn't realize that William, even in the family, even the way people treated them in the family, the day-to-day stuff, even the help, if you always know who the favored person is in the family, you pick up those subtle cues. But I think Harry was comfortable with that. I just don't think Meghan was comfortable with being the second fiddle. I think she felt like, hey, wait a minute. We're just as important as anyone else is.
In the family. And I feel like that's what's so mystifying about this. But I guess she seemed, in her interview, at least with Tom Bradby, to be really deeply distressed by the way she's been portrayed in the media. And I guess I can understand Harry's being totally sympathetic to that, especially after watching what his mother went through.
I would like to talk. No one has really sat down and spoken to Sarah Ferguson.
Okay.
No, but seriously, I think that's apples and apples. Because, you know, once again, don't forget, Sarah Ferguson is coming in on the heels of Lady Di, okay? The same way that Meghan is coming in on the heels of William and Kate getting married and having their kids. So now all of a sudden, here is Sarah Ferguson marrying the other brother, who is not going to be in line for the throne, same as Harry. And here comes Sarah Ferguson, who has to deal with, a very popular first couple of Charles and Di, regardless of what was going on behind the scenes in the media and in the public. They were the couple. Mm-hmm. And she and Andrew were kind of this, oh, and by the way thing. And she didn't handle that well either.
But that's what I'm saying is, I don't think Meghan and Harry were, by the way. I think they were stealing spotlight from Kate and William. I think that they, especially because it's still so new. It wasn't that long ago that they got married.
But at the end of the
day, that they had the baby.
The key point, what I'm trying to get is I'm not worried about the public's.
Oh, you mean inside the
family? She's saying, okay, No one's asking me how I am. Nobody's right. Sticking up for me. I understand that from a personal standpoint, but from the other side of the standpoint, they're saying to her, you already won the lottery. You are in this family. You've got this privilege. You've got this position. There's nothing in the world that you would want. And the price for that is that given where he stands on the thing, you will be taken care of. You will live in luxury. But when it comes to it, when William and Kate walk in the room, that's who we pay attention to. And if William has a sniffle, we're more worried about William's sniffle than if your arm is hanging off. That's the truth. He's the king as crazy as that sound, in the monarchy, in the way that is set up, what happens to the king is much more important than anyone else. That's just the way it is.
But I will tell you this. I don't believe that anyone in the royal family asks anyone else in the royal family how they're doing. I don't think the queen
asked
Charles.
This is my point.
Because, again, they were raised with this idea of never complain, never explain.
Right, okay? And that's so she has to either. So she's saying, you know what? This is my point about the millennial view. Oh, you know what? I don't like that. I don't want to live like that. And then she's tugging this guy going, hey. You know, then she's, I don't know if she's throwing fits, and he's sitting there going, holy smokes, what's going on here? Because he doesn't know how to handle this.
You know, their whole thing, the courtship, the wedding, everything felt like such a fairy tale. And so now I think what's really hard for people to get their heads around is, why would someone want to, like, you know, just dismantle their own fairy tale? She's clearly saying, hey, this isn't the fairy tale everyone thinks it is. But I believe that they did this because they know that they've got leverage. I believe that they probably, well, let's do our predictions right now. Let's do our predictions. My prediction is they'll get to keep the HRH titles. They will get to live half the year outside of the UK. They will get to pursue their charitable.
That's all. Like I said, all that's, you know what? They, like you said before, they're going to, they hold all the cards.
Right.
That's fine.
I think they'll get cut off from any public taxpayer funding, but I think they will have some funding from
and all that
Charles,
but all
private
that fine they funding. will be taken care of one way or the other. There's billions of dollars there. My point is, what this really was is what you've said earlier, which is the key point of this whole thing, is they weren't getting what they wanted. They wanted to have, you know, they wanted both feet. They basically are saying, I'm taking my toys and running away. That's exactly, it's my ball, and I'm leaving the game. If you can't play by my rules, then I don't want to play anymore. That's basically what this is, and that is the definition of a selfish, spoiled little kid. No, well, that is. I mean, you can gasp at that, but that's what, if you see a kid that goes, well, it's my ball and I'm going home, what do you say to that kid? What kind of is that the way he's supposed to act? Or is he supposed to play with the others?
Well, if that little kid is the Duchess of Sussex, I don't know what I say about it. I mean,
But this Duchess of Sussex stuff is bullshit. That's all just creative stuff. At the end of the day, as I said, you got two brothers. One is the honcho, and the other one isn't going to be the honcho. And I think the other one's honcho's wife is saying, how come we're not in that picture? How come this? How come this? How come this? And so he's finally like probably said to her, look, because that's not the way the setup is. And if she said, well, if that's not the way the setup is, then I don't want to be in the setup. And that's basically what this comes down to. Titles and stipends and all that stuff. At the end of the day, we got two brothers. One's in line to become the big guy, and the other one isn't. And the other guy's new wife says, how come you're not being able to do all that stuff? He says, hey, that's not my role. Well, why can't it be your role? Well, because it just isn't.
I don't believe that they would have walked away from it without knowing. We'll still hang on to a title. We'll still. I do not. If they thought that they were walking away from all of it, I don't think that you know, private life would be as interesting to them.
Well, of course not.
I think the private life is interesting to them as long as they can still.
Well, isn't that the term? Isn't that a definition of selfishness? Of getting everything you want.
Yeah,
of having the best of both worlds, of not facing consequences. They, you know, the funny thing is, we talked about at the beginning of this. They made this historical announcement. What aside from the bullshit about the titles and all the other stuff, at the end of the day, what sacrifices have they just made? Nothing. They got everything they wanted.
Well, we don't know yet what they're getting. That's still to be determined. But from the sounds of it,
don't worry. As I said, is Charles not going to take care of his kid in his will? Is he not going to leave him $100 million?
That remains to be seen. Okay. However,
all right.
The main thing right now is that the Queen, in her personal statement that she issued, was basically lending her support. She said, "We support and understand their decision to want to live independently while still." I don't know what she
because they're second class citizens in our house.
Members of the royal family.
Because they're second class citizens in their house, and they're not getting the attention that they want. That's
well, you know, it's like this though. Think about that. Think about the royal family as like a corporation. Okay, when you have like a really senior person, whether that's someone on the leadership team or someone on any team, let's say they're bringing a lot of revenue in. They're very valuable to the company. Okay. They have leverage. So when they say, yeah, you know what? I don't want to do this role anymore. I want to stay with the company, but I want to be able to be relocated to like the coolest city we have an office in. And I want to have a different role where I don't really have to do as much of the like, you know, the like silly stuff. And I want to do more important things. I want to do more strategic things. Okay. In most negotiations, that person would have a lot of leverage and they would probably end up getting most of what they're asking for because the company doesn't want to lose them. Right.
Okay,
look at it more like this is more, I mean, it is, they are, it's like a firm. That is what they are.
I use that exact example to say that this guy is not the CEO. And so I think because yes, he brings value. He's basically being everything you just described is saying, I want to be a part of the firm, but I don't want to have to do the stuff I don't want to. Okay? Then that to me is selfish because being a part of this firm, these are the qualifications. And this is what it takes to be a part of this company. And if you start to say, well, I want to do this, but I don't want to do that, and I don't want to do that, and I don't want, then don't be a part of the company. Go make your own company.
I know, but someone who brings in X number of dollars in revenue or pounds or however you want to look at it.
I understand that.
I understand that.
I'm just saying I understand the monarchy doesn't want to lose them. That's not the point here. My point is the motivation of these two people who supposedly should know or should have been explained to the newcomer of what this is and what the requirements are. And if you don't want it, then don't be involved in it because this is what it is.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because I think it will be interesting to see moving forward how this shapes their onboarding of people who are marrying into the royal family because this isn't the first time someone has felt isolated and lonely and disenfranchised. You know, Diana went through it too, and she was very vocal post-divorce about that. And so maybe that's part of what they need to do. Once they get through this current crisis of needing to hammer out exactly what this new role looks like for Meghan and Harry, and they get past that, and everyone starts to move on with their lives over there, maybe they need to put a team of people on figuring out in this new modern era where people can't just accept that they're expected to just come in, fall in line, right?
Right.
Keep a stiff upper lip. Don't complain.
Oh,
don't explain.
I can't wait. Oh, I can't wait.
They need to figure out how to more gently onboard people. I think if you look at them as like a firm, let's say, that's what they need to do, right?
Oh,
people
I can't wait.
A company, there's a whole orientation process, and there's no doubt that goes on there.
Oh, it certainly does.
I think it does in terms of protocol. I think when people are joining that family, they probably go through very rigorous orientation about what the protocol is, what their duties are, this and that, you know, even who gets into the car first, you or the queen, who picks up, you know, as soon as the queen's done eating, everyone's done eating, there's that stuff. Here's how you greet foreign dignitaries, there's that stuff.
Wait until...
But I don't think there's any thought to helping them understand how their emotional lives are going to change.
Wait until Charlotte becomes 18 years old. And wait until...
No, see, I think you're wrong because she will be more like Charles.
Okay, but I'm playing to your point. If we are in now a different realm where these people that are born into this thing have now a right to say, here's the thing, this is the difference. What you just said is correct, except that the tradition for 9 million years has been, this is your burden. You, as I said before, you get this, and for this, you get that.
Right.
But now what you're saying is that people like Harry and Meghan and Diana and whatever are saying, well, no, I don't buy into that. Oh, okay. But that's a new thing. So my point is, if we're going to start now, the structure now is not rigid, and people are allowed to have their feelings and have to and do their a la carte kind. What it mean, royal a la carte, because that's basically.
Or alternatively, it could swing the other way, and then number one, this is the last time a royal is allowed to marry.
Well, this is my point. Well, so we'll see. Like to your point, you said. Who knows?
Or they could go back to the tradition of when royals didn't marry quote unquote commoners,
right?
Which even Princess Diana, even though she came from aristocracy, right, she was still considered technically a commoner. Maybe they'll go back to the old ways where you end up marrying, a royal from another country.
What I'm saying about Charlotte is Charlotte falls into some of the same situation, who now she is the second heir behind George and then behind her father. So my point is, let's say now 15 years from now, the queen is dead. Let's say Charles dies, and now William is king, okay? So now William is king, and George is the heir, okay? So now, if you do the addition, it's going to be 45, 50 years or never that Charlotte takes the throne.
It'll probably be never.
Okay, so now this is my point. Is she now bored? She knows, like Harry, that she's not going to become queen. So now does she say, well, gee whiz, I feel like a third cog here. I don't want to have to cut ribbons, and I don't want to have to do this. So my point is, if you open up this door, because that we talked about, this is not an easy life to lead. It is not easy to bite your lip and say nothing. But that was the requirement. If we're now allowing them to say, well, there's some things we like and some things we don't, you're opening the door for every person now who is not going to get the ultimate prize to now say, well, I don't want to do that. So now when Charlotte turns 18, is she going to say, well, I know I'm an heir to the throne, but I don't want to have to do that. So now we're going to have to make another, we'll see what happens. Are we going to have to make a new rule for what she gets to do now? And this is my point is, once you break tradition, traditions can be great or they can be terrible. But the fact is, once you allow a crack in that armor, then the door is open. And then the next person goes, well, you let Harry do it. I mean,
right. Well,
you've got a couple of kids, right? You've got a couple of kids. If one gets away with something, doesn't the other one say, well, you let him do it? You let her do it?
So, yeah, I'm sure that's going to be part of how they'll be considering what the terms of this deal will be.
I just think Harry has lived in that bubble for his entire life. He's been married for a year and a half or 2 years, and suddenly he can't take it. So you tell me what the problem is. You tell me what the problem is.
There is a school of thought that Harry has wanted out for a long time, and that it was Meghan who finally empowered him to take the steps to do that. So we'll never really know. I mean, we'll never really know.
Yeah. That could be the case too. Who knows? But as I said, at the end of the day, I love this palace intrigue. Because it is interesting.
Yeah.
It is interesting. And but I do believe, I mean, I'm all for people, doing what they want to do. I'm not some strict, but I do believe that whole monarchy is such a unique and different just animal that there are some things that you do have to say. You know what? I'm going to have to give this up. Because even, like we were talking about Edward, another one of Elizabeth's kids, if you remember, he married a woman who had a public relations agency. And she had her business for a while, and then the British press, even though she was much farther down on the thing of succession, there was a big story about her one time because she had a PR firm, and they basically had her on tape saying, "Well, you know, with my position in the royal family, I could help you out." Well,
yeah,
right after that happened, guess what happened? PR firm closed. Back into the royal family. No outside jobs. Go cut the ribbons. Go on the Britannia yacht. Do whatever you want to do. Go to the Highlands. Go to Scotland. Live in all the castles. No more of this other stuff. You don't need another job. This is your job.
That's why a lot of this is really complicated for them to hammer out, because it will be interesting to see how Harry and Meghan go about establishing, quote, financial independence, apart from the wealth that they already have, which they do have. Like you said, their own money. He's got like $30 million something. She had a couple million dollars when she married him. Fine. But, you know, I can't see anything they do, like, without donating the proceeds to charity. It feels icky. And also for royals, just in general, the reason they're really not allowed to have jobs outside.
Yeah, I mean, is Harry going to do a commercial?
They can't be seen to be trading on their
right.
title.
Is Harry going to do is Harry going to do a commercial for White Claw Seltzer?
Well, but did you see the video of him talking to Bob Iger, who's the head of Disney, and when they went to the Lion King premiere? Have you seen this video yet?
No,
because this has now come to light. So when this was originally in the media, it was because they're at the premiere of the Lion King. And it's Harry and Meghan, and they're going down a line greeting people. And it's Bob Iger, is that his name?
Yeah, the head of Disney.
Bob Iger and his wife, and then right next to them, Beyonce and Jay-Z. And I remember when they went to this premiere, and all the headlines were about Meghan and Beyonce, and they hugged and they chatted. And you know, when the video came out then, you could hear their exchange isolated. Well, now they've standing right next to Meghan as she's talking to Beyonce, there's Harry talking to Bob Iger, and what's been isolated is the audio of his conversation. And in his conversation, he's basically sounds like he's pitching Meghan to Bob Iger. He's saying to her, you know, she does voiceovers. She'd be really interested. And then you see Bob Iger go like, oh, really? I think he's caught off guard by this like pitch even. And then Harry says, oh, you seem surprised by that. And then there's some inaudible stuff that you don't quite get what is said.
She wants to keep, this is my point, she wants to keep acting. She wants to stay in the limelight. She doesn't want to be a second-class citizen.
Okay, I do. She's not a second-class citizen, though. Even where they were, she was still.
But they wouldn't let her. She wants to be on a TV show. She wants to be an actress.
I don't know about that. I don't know
about
that.
You watch. You watch.
So now it's only out of fairness. I have to mention that. But then after this came to light, they reported that she has already done a voiceover for Disney.
Right.
And then they reported that the proceeds from
goes
that
to charity.
Going to Elephant Rescue Charity. However, that said, just watching Harry pitch her to Bob Iger felt icky.
Okay.
You know?
Well, guess who that order came from?
I get it. I hear what you're saying.
I guarantee you she's going to be in another year. She's going to be in some kind of a TV or film project. I guarantee you. I guarantee it.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, I know. At the end of the day, you root for love.
I know. I do still, but I don't think that is her aim now. I think she's going to be, she's more on an Oprah track or a Michelle Obama track.
Okay, but that's my point. She couldn't do that. She could not be Oprah or Gail or all that other stuff if she was in the royal family. She wants this is what I've been saying from the beginning. She wants the limelight, and she isn't getting it anymore because after the wedding and after the kid, traditionally, those side people, of which she is, regardless of her rock star status in the hierarchy of the monarchy, they are way off to the left. in terms of the way the branch goes. I'm not talking about their popularity with the media or the family.
I'm just
talking about on paper, they are so far off the left, they're almost in the glove compartment. They're not even on the paper anymore. And she's
now they're not even in the glove compartment.
Yeah.
They're in Canada.
But what this does is free her or him, but mostly her up so that she can do these kind of previously unavailable opportunities that that a member of the royal family would not even be considered for, and certainly would probably not get the approval to do. By her going away and being on their own, if she wants to now suddenly, if she wants to do this, whether it's for charity or not, she gets to do this voiceover. She likes that. That's my point, is that I think she got in there and she's like, well, wait a minute. I thought everything I did was just going to be okay. And now when I get in here, wait a minute, there's a hierarchy and we're not on it. So I don't want to play by these rules. That's what it's come down to.
Well, you know what we should do is we should set a year from now, set a date. 1 year from today, we'll record. Right, a special.
All right. Oh yeah. Well, mark it down. Well, I'll just tell you right now. Episode 191 is when I made my prediction. So on January, I'm taping this on January 15th. So you tell me. I've already predicted correctly that the Cubs would fire their manager, and that happened. And I also predicted correctly that the Bears would miss the playoffs this year and either be 7-9 and 8-8, and they were 8-8. So far, I'm 2-2. And in April, I predicted that Donald Trump would get reelected, and I have no problems with that prediction either. So right now, I think I'm 3-3.
You're two for two.
Well,
right
just
now,
wait until November because
well, I'll, so we'll
by 9 o'clock, the hour after the polls close, I'll give you a call.
Well, we can do another special edition
because if you think that Bernie Sanders Or Ellen McCormick or Warren Christopher, whatever, Elizabeth Warren is going to be a Trump president, you're out of your mind. And I predict.
My prediction is I have no prediction on that.
And I'm talking as a person who's a registered Democrat. I don't even like Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sitting there going, you guys are missing the boat here.
And
I've said this many times, the sad part is if they do nominate, and I don't know how we got on this, but I'll just say it. The sad part is if the Democrats nominate Warren, the sad part is not only will she get trounced in the general election, but it's going to put female presidents, nominees back 20 years. Because if two women in a row had been nominated for the Democratic nomination and they both lost, then when is the next time a woman's going to be nominated?
Well, I don't know, but you're assuming that she might get the nomination. And to do that, she has to get through Bernie, Buttigieg, and Biden.
Well, if those are
the
your
three B's.
And if those are the three B's, B cubed, and if she and if those are your toughest competitors, holy smokes.
Well, and if you ask me, 3 out of 4 of those people are probably too old, to be honest with you.
Exactly. So. I know. This is my point. My point is they had 4 years to find a strong candidate, and we're down to this now. I can't believe that. And like if she gets trounced in the general election, if she doesn't get the nomination, in the world of politics, if there's people that are that are looking at the game, and if they are saying, okay, we had two women 2 years in a row or two elections in a row, they didn't win, I think it's going to set back women candidates for president back 20 years.
Well, I hope not. But
so do I. But like I said, I think that there's been a drive. I mean, they have to have a woman on the ticket. I mean, I think Elizabeth Warren's going to be on the ticket somewhere. They have to have a woman on the ticket.
Yeah, I mean, they just need to get their acts together and figure out what's the best strategy for the
party. Regardless, I'm making my prediction. I guarantee you that Meghan will be in suits too.
hey, you know what? Maybe she'll run. If she's not a
well, she'll have to run against Justin. No, she'll have to run against Justin.
If she's not a working royal, she can get political again.
Now is she? Now she was. Now she's. Now is she like? I mean, do you think that by being a member of the royal family, did she automatically have to become a British citizen? You know what I mean?
I think. Well, she did. I think she did.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did.
Okay, because I'm just wondering what the requirements there. So really now she can't. So she can't be president. Well,
for starters, just to live there, she would at least have to have a partner visa. And if you're going to do that, you might as well just get your citizenship.
Well, I hope if you're a member of the royal family, you become a British citizen just out of, you know.
You would think.
Out of just, you know, being nice.
Maybe she has to write up, you know, apply, take the test like everybody else who wants to be a citizen, you know. Who knows?
Well, we have certainly exhausted this topic, and we've actually gotten to some heated debates, and I thought this was great. I appreciate you sharing your views and your knowledge, because you certainly are certainly up to date on this. And I,
when it comes to the royals, you know, I'm always going to have an opinion.
Yeah, and I appreciate you holding on to your guns, because I was yelling at you, and that's great, and I appreciate that. And we will see what happens. And so we'll see what happens to When Harry Met Meghan. But this will continue to be a soap opera, and I will only it's going to only get more intriguing as time goes on. Not only what they do. But then what happens when Charles ultimately takes over? Because then there's going to be a whole stuff about Camilla. You know, is she going to be queen? Is she not? Even though they've already said that she won't. You know, that's because the queen's still alive. When he's king, you watch how fast she gets a crown on her head.
Right. Yes.
So, believe me. More royal watching never gets boring. And I just want to say thank you to Emily for joining us. And we'll talk to you soon.
Anytime. Thanks, Jim.
And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com, or we can find this podcast anywhere where you find your favorite podcast. Don't forget to rate us, subscribe to that platform, and pass it on to your friends that you listen to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And don't forget, you can also go to the landing page at WGNplus.com and find all previous episodes. Hope you enjoyed episode number 191. I certainly did. Oh, boy, my blood is flowing right now. I'm going to have to go have an argument with someone else now. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.